Today's presenter is Vikram. Am I Drew? Vikram?
Yes.
He has been working on the SM and admin components for more than 4 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Vikram.
Thank you, Elijah. Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Vikram Thomendru. I have been working in WebSphere Level 2 support for about 4 years in a system management component area. Thank you for everyone joining into this session, and I hope you will find something useful from this session when you walk out from this presentation. Slide number 2. In today's presentation, I'm going to talk about system administration tasks, system management architecture for standalone application server, and as well as network deployment cell. Web server definitions in the WebSphere topology, file synchronization service, configuration archives, and also the generic servers and common problems that we see and that we hear when you are working on WebSphere system management administration. Moving on to slide number 3. System administrator tasks include learning the environment and the topology of WebSphere, making configuration changes to the topology, such as once you install the WebSphere product, if you are setting up a cluster environment, so you require to create a new cluster and its members, all this comes into this section. And also managing enterprise applications, deploying application or managing any sort of operation on the existing application or new application. And also this task includes making operational changes such as starting and stopping WebSphere processes, applications, and any services that are running on top of these WebSphere servers. And the last one is problem determination. Slide number 4. These are some of the new system management features in WebSphere 6.0, and these are carried over to WebSphere 6.1. In today's presentation, pretty much I'm going to talk about some of the new features that we have in WebSphere 6.0 and 6.1. The configuration archives. So administrator has the ability to export and import the configuration. So which means the administrator can export entire profile configuration or the specific application server configuration from one installation, and we can import that configuration information into your remote machine or into the same machine. And also we're going to talk about the fine-grained application update in WebSphere 6.0. This is something new in earlier versions of WebSphere 5.1 or 5.0. Pretty much we had only one option when updating an existing application. In this WebSphere 6.0, we have a lot of options, like for example, we can update specific module of that enterprise application. And also we have the administrative console that includes integrated of Tivoli performance viewer, and also the administrator has the ability to perform administration on the web server, such as like IBM HTTP server or Microsoft IIS server or Apache web server. And also we have like expanded wsadmin command line task. And also we do have the support for extensible server types, such as web servers and the generic servers. And WebSphere 6.0, we have additional resources scopes. Example, cluster level and the application level. If you want to create any resource in WebSphere 6.1, you could create on your application level scope and also on the cluster level scope. These two options were not there in the previous versions. And also we do have the mixed version cells. For example, you can have WebSphere 6.1 DMZR managing WebSphere 5.1 node and the WebSphere 6.0 nodes, as well as you can have WebSphere 6.0 deployment manager managing WebSphere 5.1 node in the same cell. Slide number 5. Standalone server system management model. In this topology, basically pretty much when you install the standalone WebSphere application server, by default you will get only one app server, which is server 1. So this server 1 will have the access to complete configuration files and as well as all the application related information. By default, you have only one server, which is server 1. If you want to create any new additional servers in a standalone server installation, we normally recommend creating a new profile using the same binaries, so that the new profile is going to have its own app server. Again, the server name is going to be the server 1. You have the ability to create a new server using WSAdmin command line tool into the same profile, but there are some limitations, which means you cannot perform any kind of administration from the administrative console for that non-default server. So that is the reason we normally recommend create a new profile so that you will get a new app server so that you can, you know, you can deploy your application into this new profile server. System administrator uses the administrative clients such as admin console or WSAdmin command line tool, or you can write your own JMX program using WebSphere JMX API to manage and operate the application server. Slide number 6. WebSphere provides multiple administrative clients to manage the environment from the configuration and operation perspective, such as administrative console, scripting, which is WSAdmin command line tool. So basically, you can use WSAdmin command line tool to perform any kind of administration on the WebSphere application server instead of using administrative console. In 6.0 and 6.1, we do support with the WSAdmin scripting language, the Jekyll and Jython. And also, we do have several command line tools. For example, like to start the server, you can start the server using start server or stop server. And also, you can use, there are like some other scripts, for example, server status to check the server status, whether it is up and running or it is stopped. And also, you can write custom Java program using WebSphere JMX API. Sometimes you might be having the requirement wherein in your organization you may not want to use administrative console or the scripting tool. So you can write your own JMX program using our WebSphere JMX API. It's pretty much you can perform whatever the task you can do using the administrative console or WSAdmin tool. So all you have to do is you will need to write a Java program using our API, JMX API, that is being published in the WebSphere Info Center section. And so using that, you can perform such as, for example, you can deploy any enterprise application or you can start the application. And also you can perform starting the server or stopping the server, things like that. The administration clients connect to the application server using SOAP protocol or RMI protocol based on the type of the client you are using. If you are using any EJP client, so it uses RMI IOP protocol. Whereas in a normal scenario, we pretty much use SOAP protocol, which runs on top of HTTP. Slide number 7. In a standalone server, the repository structure looks like as shown in this picture. The configuration repository uses the same structure for a standalone WebSphere application server as it does for full network deployment cell. This makes federation process relatively smoother under the covers. The repository has a three-tier structure of cells, nodes, and servers, as shown in this page. Resources may be defined at any level of these three levels. For example, you can define a resource on the cell level scope, or the node level scope, or the server level scope. It is advisable to define the resources at the node or the server level in a standalone server. Why? Because this will preserve the resources when you need to federate the servers to your deployment manager at a later time. So if you have the resources created with a cell level scope, if you are happening to federate this app server profile into the DMZ or cell, it is not going to carry over all those resources. So it is a good practice creating a resources with a node level scope or the server level scope. Slide number 8. How the system management model looks in network deployment cell environment. The network deployment cell system management model has one deployment manager and zero or more nodes. So when you install the DMZ or the deployment manager profile, so you may not be having any nodes already federated. And of course, you do have the option during the installation time. You can say, like, I want to create a new app server profile, and it does creation of that app server profile, and also you can federate that app server profile into the DMZR. But when you say a cell, you can have zero or more nodes. And also each node has one node agent process running and zero or more application server, as shown within the cell. The deployment manager contains the master copy of the configuration repository. So basically, in a federated environment, you have all your configuration data stored in the deployment manager configuration folder. This is called master copy of configuration. Each node has a local copy of configuration repository needed for all the process on that node. The process on a node do not need to get the files from the deployment manager when they start. So when you have the DMG or having one node federated, so to start any application server or the node agent process, it is not required DMG or should be running. So we should be able to start the node agent without having node agent up and running. But there is a dependency, so before starting the application server, node agent should be up and running. Because on the node agent process, there is the location service daemon running. So that's the reason, so we always need to make sure node agent is up and running before starting any application server. When configuration files are modified in the master repository, the changes are synchronized to the nodes periodically under the system administration control. The synchronization process is described in details later, so we're going to talk about the synchronization process in next few slides in detail. Slide number 9. The repository uses the same structure in a network deployment manager as a standalone node as it does. This structure is more intuitively obvious for the deployment manager configuration. Illustrated here is the directory structure of the master repository on the deployment manager. So looking at this structure, so if you look into the DMZR profile installation path, so you're going to have the configuration folder. Under the configuration folder, you will have your cells folder. This is your cell name. Under the cell name folder, if you go further down, there is a folder name with nodes. So this node folder contains all your list of nodes. If you have multiple nodes federated into the DMZR, you're going to see all your nodes under the nodes folder. And also if you go further down, each node has a servers folder. Under this server folder, you're going to see all your application servers that are created on top of this particular node. It's pretty much the directory structure is very similar to the base standalone server profile. Slide number 10. We do have support for the WebSphere versions. Like I said, you can migrate, for example, when migrating from WebSphere v5, the 5.0 or 5.1, the environment may contain both v5 nodes as well as v6 nodes. So you might be running v5.1 network deployment manager environment. So you can upgrade only the deployment manager from the 5.1 to the 6.1 deployment manager or the 6.0 deployment manager. Still, you can keep your node running at 5.1 node of 5.1 version level. So still you can manage those nodes, 5.1 nodes and 6.0 nodes from the 6.1 deployment manager. In a v6 cell that has mixed v5 and v6 nodes, the master configuration is always saved with the v6 formatted data. During the process of synchronization, this data is transferred so that v5 nodes get repository data in the v5 format, and v6 nodes see v6 formatted data. This transformation occurs using SSLT supplied by the product. So basically, pretty much behind the scene, the WebSphere will take care of everything. So which means you can have v5.1 node or the v6 node or the both of them in the 6.1 deployment manager cell. And also you can have like DMG are running on one operating system, and also the apps or profile running on a different machine or different operating system remotely. Slide number 11, file synchronization. Repository synchronization uses the file transfer application and it is initiated by the node agent process. Updates are never pushed from the node level up to the cell level, which means always the synchronization process is one-way communication. You can always propagate the changes from the deployment manager master configuration to the node level configuration, whereas you cannot push the changes from the node level configuration into the deployment manager. The file transfer application will be running on the deployment manager. So like for example, it is very similar to the admin console. By default, when you install the product, You have the admin console as well as file transfer application that comes with the WebSphere Deployment Manager. These two are system applications. So which means when you log into the admin console, if you go into applications, enterprise applications, you will not be seeing these two applications listing out in that page. Whereas in previous version, you were able to see those two applications listing in the enterprise applications list, and also it used to be possible to uninstall and reinstall these two applications if something goes wrong with those two applications. File transfer application uses the HTTPS protocol to transfer the files from the deployment manager master configuration to the node level configuration. If you have the security on, it's going to use HTTPS protocol to transfer the files. Slide number 12. The file synchronization service is the administrative service responsible for keeping up to date the configuration documents that are distributed across the WebSphere application server cell. This service runs in the deployment manager and the node agent, and it ensures that configuration changes made to the cell master repository are propagated to the appropriate nodes. Like I said in the previous slide, basically we use this file transfer application to propagate the changes from the master repository to the node repository. The file synchronization is controlled by the configuration settings, which means the administrator can control these settings for this file synchronization process. There is an automatic synchronization setting. When this is enabled, the node agent will automatically contact the deployment manager periodically as defined by the synchronization interval setting. So by default, this value is 1 minute. So for every 1 minute, node agent process will communicate with the deployment manager and initiates the synchronization request, and it invokes auto synchronization. If there are any changes being made within this minute, they are going to propagate into the node level configuration. The automatic synchronization setting will also cause a file synchronization to occur when either the node agent or the deployment manager start and it initially establishes a communication. So even when you start the deployment manager and the node agent, it is going to invoke this auto synchronization. You can force a synchronization using the WSAdmin tool or the administrative console provided by the WebSphere. You can also force a full synchronization rather than just to change the files. This can be used to ensure you have everything up to date. So there is a script available from the command line which is available on the app server node. It is called syncnode.sh, or else you can use full resynchronization option from the deployment manager console. So when you run this full resynchronization, it doesn't mean that it is going to propagate or redistribute all the files from the master repository to the base server repository. It means that a full comparison is done in order to cache manually edited files. So if you are editing any XML file on the master configuration, if you just perform auto synchronization, the WebSphere does not know anything about those manual changes. So either you have to perform full resynchronization from the admin console or execute this synchronization script from the app server node bin directory. When the startup synchronization setting is enabled, it means that a file synchronization will, there is another setting which is startup synchronization. When this setting is enabled, the file synchronization will occur whenever an application server is started, thus ensuring that the application server has the latest level of configuration. When using this option, you might be seeing little bit the performance, because whenever you start the application server, it's going to invoke this synchronization. So it takes, usually more time than if you don't take this option. It is very important that you understand file synchronization and that you define a file synchronization strategy you want to use in your environment. Your needs may be different for a production environment than they are for a development or test environment. For example, in production, your strategy may be only allow file synchronization to occur when you specifically request it rather than letting automatic synchronization occur. By default, this auto synchronization for every minute takes place unless you disable that option. So since it is taking place for every minute, you might be seeing very, very little performance hit. So you may want to turn it off, especially in the production environments. if you want to. So that, you know, whenever there are any changes being made from the deployment manager, so you can force that synchronization process either by clicking on synchronization button or the full resynchronization from the system administration's notes tab. And also you can increase this automatic synchronization interval setting value from 1 minute to maybe any value, like maybe 10 minutes or 30 minutes, something like that. Slide number 13. What is synchronized? Only changes made by the administrative clients will be marked for the synchronization. This is for the normal synchronization, the auto synchronization. So if you are making any changes manually by editing any of the XML file in the master configuration, if you just perform just synchronization, that is not going to propagate those changes to the node level configuration. So you have to use full resynchronization option or the sync node script. Here one thing we need to keep in mind, so when running this synchronization script from the command line on the node level, so we need to make sure node agent is not running. Otherwise it's going to complain saying that node agent is running, so make sure it is stopped. If the synchronization process is failing for some reason, you may need to check a couple of things. For example, like sometimes you might be seeing when you are deploying an application, so when you click on save to synchronize those changes, you might be getting some error messages. So just make sure like the file transfer application is running on the DMZR process, and also make sure if you have your app server profile and the DMZR profile are installed on two different machines, they are able to ping each other. And also to make sure the SOAP connector address for the node agent and the DMZR are open. But you can check that status by using netstat command in the Unix or on the Windows machine. So for this synchronization, if you have multiple nodes, only changed files pertaining to that particular node are synchronized for that node. So if you are making any change, you have two nodes federated, you are making some change only on the node one from the administrative console on the DMZR. So basically it's going to propagate that change only for that node on both nodes. Basically it's going to push that information for the node one. It's going to happen for both nodes. Slide number 14. Distributed process discovery. When servers start, they each have access to their own configuration data. Other servers that they normally communicate with may or may not be running. So we need to determine which ones are running. So like when you have the deployment manager running, so the deployment manager doesn't know whether the node agent is running. So there should be a way to discover whether the node agent is running or not. So basically the deployment manager and the node agent process as well as the app server process, they use this discovery protocol mechanism to discover each other. And you on the DMZR process, you have DMZR, the discovery port number listening. On the node agent side, you're going to see node discovery protocol address. Basically, when you start the node agent process, what happens is, let's assume you have the DMZR up and running. And what it does is, it will try to send a query to the node agent process to see whether node agent is active or not. If it is active, it establishes a communication with the node agent process. Normally, if you open the system.log file for the deployment manager process, you will be seeing a line of entry stating that the DMZR discovered node agent, so-and-so node agent process. In the same way, you will be seeing the same entry on the node agent system.log file stating that the node agent is able to discover DMZR. If you are not seeing those entries, yeah, it's a problem. And also we need to make sure whether the discovery ports are listening or not. Even if there is a problem with the ports, yeah, you may be seeing the problem with the discovery protocols. And also the same mechanism applies between node agent and the app server. So the app, so when you start the app server, it will try to discover node agent, and the node agent will try to discover app server process. So when do you see the problem with the discovery? Let's say, for example, sometimes you might be seeing like the node agent is up and running, app server is up and running, but the status of your application servers or the enterprise applications showing up with unavailable in the administrative console. So So that tells that the discovery is not working between DMZR and the knowledge in process. And also you can check the status of that particular node. If you go into system administration tab in the console and then node section, if you see the status of that nodes, you will be seeing the status is unavailable or not available, something like that. All right, yeah, so for basically these two, the discovery process and the synchronization process are very, very important operations in the discovery, in the WebSphere application server. Basically, these two applies only in the network deployment manager environments, because in the standalone server, we don't have these two processes running because we don't have the node agent process on a standalone server. Slide number 15. Here, we're going to discuss about the web server definitions. This is something new in WebSphere 6.0 and 6.1. The administrator can perform administration for these web servers using administrative console, which is running on the DMZR process. Slide number 16. This is something new in WebSphere 6.0 and 6.1. And administrator has the ability to define a web server configuration within a node. In the case of IHS server, the WebSphere administrative console can stop and start the web server and transparently update the plugin configuration file on a remote machine where the WebSphere is installed. So if you have a web server machine with a managed node, so you have the node agent process running, it's pretty much similar to the regular app server profile. So when you say start the web server from the console, it's going to communicate with the node agent, and the node agent will in turn start that web server process. Also, the WebSphere can selectively target applications to specific web servers so that only specific web servers can route requests to that application. Web server can be defined on managed or unmanaged nodes. The concept of managed node means a node agent is running on the same system as the web server. So you have the node agent running on the web server machine. With an unmanaged node, there is no node agent process. But this may be useful if you want to place the web server, especially in a DMZ. So when you have the web server with the unmanaged node option, since you don't have the node agent process running, you cannot start that web server from the DMZ or console. You will define the managed or unmanaged node option after you install IHS server and then during the installation of plugin installation. So when you install plugin component, yeah, you will get the option whether this is going to be a managed node or unmanaged node. I think the options will be slightly different. The options you will be seeing remote and client. Remote means it's by default it's a managed, local is unmanaged. Slide number 17. The standalone application server environment only supports the notion of a web server in an unmanaged node. When the plugin is installed on your system with the application server, a web server definition is created within that configuration. The plugin configuration files will have to be propagated to the server that the web server is installed. So it requires manual operation, like you need to manually propagate or copy the plugin configuration files into the web server machine. Propagation is supported for the IHS 6.0 web server using IHS administration server. WebSphere has the ability to map applications to a specific web server. In this case, since there can be only one single web server in a standalone, the WebSphere installation, all applications will be mapped to the same web server. Why can't we have a managed node in a standalone server? Because when we say managed node, that requires the node agent process running. So whereas in a standalone server, we cannot have the node agent process. So that's the reason by default, in a standalone server, the web server node is going to be the unmanaged. The web server cannot be managed from the administrative console because of these reasons. because we don't have the knowledge and process running, so we cannot start or stop that web server. Slide number 18. In a network deployment manager environment, web servers can either be defined as a managed or unmanaged node. As a managed node, there will be a node agent present that will allow the deployment manager to manage the web server. In an unmanaged node, there is no node agent process running, so the deployment manager is more limited in dealing with the web server. Administrative tasks allow the user to create a new web server definition from templates that have been defined. So once you have the web server defined, you can create a new web server using that existing web server definition template. A new web server definition template can be created from an existing web server definition. The administrative console also provides enhanced functionality to customize the plugin configuration files for a web server. The plugin can then be propagated to a managed web server or manually copied to unmanaged web server. Excuse me. So basically, when you have the web server node defined with a managed node option, so when you click on plugin region, it's going to propagate that plugin file into the web server machine. And also, when you deploy the application or during that process, at some point, there is a step called map modules to application server, wherein you can, you can map that application to your regular application server as well as one of the web server. So, for example, server 1 and the web server 1. You can map the enterprise application to these two servers. So when you generate a plugin file from the console, so you can generate a plugin file specific to this web server so that whenever the request comes from this web server, it will route automatically into this particular application. So you have the customization, you can generate the plugin configuration files specific to some web servers in the topology. Slide number 19. This slide shows an example of web server in a managed node. A node agent is present on the server where the web server is installed. The web server is managed by the deployment manager through the node agent process. Pretty much the node agent acts as an interface between the remote server and the deployment manager process. The node agent provides the ability to start and stop the web server as well as automatically push the plugin configuration files to the web server. So node agent is the one who does all these operations. So when you generate a plugin configuration files, the DMGR is going to notify the node agent process. Node agent will make sure propagating that plugin configuration file to the node configuration. This scenario is most common for behind a firewall where a WebSphere node can be installed without any security concerns. So either you can have unmanaged node or managed node. By having a web server managed node, so you can perform administration such as starting, stopping, and generating plugin configuration files. All these options you will see during the installation of the plugin component. So when you install the plugin component, it's going to generate a script file under the plugin install bin directory. I think it is called configure-web-server-definition.sh. It is going to invoke some, when you execute this script, it is going to invoke some the predefined Jaeger script, which defines your web server into the deployment manager. Slide number 20, unmanaged node in a ND cell. In this example, the web server is defined in an unmanaged node. The web server is registered as unmanaged node in the WebSphere configuration. This allows a WebSphere system administrator to create a custom plugin file for that web server. So basically, even in the unmanaged node configuration, you can create the customized plugin configuration files. The only thing that you can do is you cannot start or stop the web server. The deployment manager has no capability to direct this web server in an unmanaged environment. Slide number 21. This is the summary of WebSphere application server supports, defining web servers as managed or unmanaged nodes, supports creating custom plugin configuration files for each web server. So you have the ability, when the web server is defined with the managed node option, so you have the ability of creating or generating customized plugin configuration files. Whereas when it comes to the starting and stop operation, you cannot perform that when it is defined with the unmanaged node option. You could do both operations when it is managed node. Slide number 22, configuration archives. I'm moving on to slide number 23. WebSphere configuration archive introduces a declarative approach to modifying configurations. Instead of having you modify the system configuration through operations, you can now define a configuration in your archive and modify the configuration by importing an archive into the system. A configuration archive is an active archive that consists of a complete or a subset of WebSphere configuration files. The layout of the configuration archive is basically the same as the real WebSphere configuration, except that it may be incomplete. So you may not be seeing all the files. You will not be seeing some of the files once you export this configuration. You may export some configurations in the system to your configuration archive. Exporting configurations to your configuration archive virtualizes the configuration and deassociates it from the real physical topology of the machines, especially when you are exporting any profile or the server. So it is not going to export, you know, your machine-specific information, all that data. This allows user, basically this option is for, it allows the users to set up configurations quickly and easily without learning any configuration operation syntax and semantics. Especially this is very useful if you want to set up very similar developer machines. Like for example, you have a lot of developers, they want to have the same development machines. So you can configure everything on one machine, and you can export that profile or the server, and you can import that into the remote machines. So eventually you want to have the same environment, same configuration on all the development machines. Slide number 24. When you export configurations from a real WebSphere configuration repository, the configuration archive feature virtualizes the configuration and it will deassociate the configuration from a real WebSphere configuration to make the exported configuration portable from system to system. Like I said, yeah, basically it's not going to, you know, preserve all your machine hostname as well as any other information, like, you know, specific to that profile. At a high level, the export function converts the real WebSphere configuration into a template that breaks up any relation, the configuration stored in the archive, and the system configuration. There are a couple of things to consider when you are working with the WebSphere configuration archives in a cluster environment. The first is, when you export an individual cluster member, the relationship of cluster member to the cluster is eliminated. However, when a complete cluster is exported, its relationship to its cluster members is preserved. In terms of export operation, there are only two target types that are supported. One is the profile, exporting a profile, or the specific application server. And here we have the examples, the example wsadmin command line scripts. We cannot export this profile or the server using administrative console, unfortunately. We have to use WebSphere admin script client to export this server. So there is a new object called admin task. Using that, you can export a profile or a server. And the example commands given in this page, the admin task export server, you're gonna provide the archive name and the node name and the server name if you are exporting a server. If you are exporting a profile, you are going to provide just the profile name where you want to export this existing profile. Slide number 25. When you import a configuration archive, your process is run that lays out the configuration defined in the archive to the real WebSphere repository. When you use this import function, you select a configuration object defined in the configuration archive as the source. So you have to specify the source and the target. The source is from your exported profile. The target is going to be either the server or the node. So here we have the couple of examples for importing the server or the profile. So you can use admin task import server command or the admin task import watch profile command to import this profile information. So at any time you can export maximum only one of your profile. You cannot export complete WebSphere configuration. This is not very similar to the backup configuration tool. Like there is a tool called backup config. So using that tool, you can take complete backup for that configuration folder, which means if you are running that backup config tool on the DMZ, or it's going to take complete backup configuration, complete backup for that deployment manager configuration folder. Whereas using this export and import configuration archives, you can export only the profile level and the server level. Slide number 26. Here you can see an example of using WebSphere configuration archives. First, you could export a real WebSphere configuration to your archive configuration archive. Configuration tasks can then be done on that archive to meet a specific situation. Remember that exporting the configuration will be virtualize the configuration so that it has no association to the physical machine. You will find more useful of this approach when setting up a lot of developer machines for local testing when it requires very similar setup and configuration. Like I said earlier, yeah, if you want to have like a lot of development machines having very similar configuration, yeah, this is the right approach, I would say. Slide number 27. The common problems. Normally, you don't see much problems when you are working with the configuration archives. So most of the time you will be seeing the problems, especially when you are importing the profile or the server. During the export operation, the WebSphere does not perform much validation. So even if you have something corrupted on your configuration, the profile configuration, it does export everything. But whereas if you are importing that configuration into the remote machine using import command, it is going to validate and you will be seeing a lot of error messages. For this example, so basically one user, he was trying to import the profile and they had an application exported into the profile, but that application was missing some of the deployment descriptor files, but still they were able to export the profile completely using export profile command, export watch profile command. But when it comes to the import watch profile command, it was throwing up all these error messages. So they had to uninstall that application and reinstall and then export that export that profile from the source machine and then import that profile into the target machine. So basically it's pretty much like I said, the problem you will be seeing only most of the time. Now I would not say every time, most of the time you will be seeing the problems only during import time, either importing profile or the server. All right. Here the slide number 29. I'm in the slide number 29. Here I'm going to talk about the few details about the fine-grained application update. In WebSphere V5, yeah, we had an option updating existing enterprise application, but it was pretty much like so when you say update the application, what it does is it uninstall existing application, it stops the application, uninstall the application, reinstall the application. Even though if you want to update specific WAR module or EJB JOR module, it's going to stop complete enterprise application. So which means you have the downtime, you cannot avoid downtime. So we are addressing these problems in WebSphere 6 and 6.1. The fine-grained update feature in WebSphere application server is intended to address these problems. You can now apply a patch, for example, supply a single JSP, and have WebSphere application server replace the same named JSP in the running application. So you can update specific JSP file or the servlet file using this update operation. You have a couple of options like update, partial update, things like that you see in the administrative console. You can also update specific VAR module or the EJB JAR module, or you can add some new JAR module or VAR module, or you can delete existing one, or you can update existing modules. Slide number 30, input to application update process. The input to the application update process can either be an entire EJR or individual components. Those components may be individual files, such as a JSP or servlet. The administrator also needs the URI relative to the ER root. You can also update complete web module or EJB JAR files in an enterprise application. A third option is to provide a partial application, which would be a zipped file which contains application artifacts. This provides a simple mechanism for updating multiple files in the application. So finally, the three options for changing an application are add, you could perform add operation or remove operation or update operation. You can add the new module into the existing application, or you can remove existing module from the application, or you can update existing module. Moving on to slide number 31. So for this application update user interface, so you have, like, we have introduced the new app management MBN. So when you are writing a Java program to perform this operation, so there is a new API for this app management MBN. So there are some new methods available for this app management MBN. And also you could perform the same update operation using WS admin tool, and also the administrative client, which is the administrative console. So when you are using a WS admin tool, so you will be specifying the options and the content type. So these two are something new. So whereas when you perform the same update operation in the previous versions, you won't see these two options. So the rollout update. It provides, basically, this rollout update provides 100% application availability. How this works is, this is very similar to the Ripple start. So when you say like rollout update, first if you have multiple nodes federated into the deployment manager, you have the cluster having cluster members running on the each node, and your application is running on this cluster. So when you perform this rollout update operation, it's going to stop. It's going to update that particular application on one node first, and then it restarts that application, and then it moves to the secondary node. So at any given time, you have your application running on one of the cluster members, so you don't have that downtime in this case. Oh, this is the application restart behavior. Prior to v6.6.1, FSphere application server only allowed starting and stopping the entire enterprise application. As part of this fine-grained application update support, the WebSphere application server runtime supports module-level start and stop operations, making it possible to recycle only parts of the running application when it is updated. Please remember that you cannot start or stop for a running application. You cannot start or stop a specific module. Let's say you have some application running. If you want to stop, like, for example, only the var module, no, it's not possible. All these options are available only during update operation. And also, if you want to start only the web modules without starting the EJB module in the same enterprise application, no, it's not possible. The next topic is generic servers. Generic servers are, the slide number 3-4. Generic servers are non-WebSphere processes that you can control from the administrative WebSphere administrative clients. They are mainly used for applications that require other processes to be running. So you can define like non-Java application or process into the WebSphere so that you can operate them from the WebSphere application server. For example, you can define the C or C++ server or the CORBA servers as a generic server in the WebSphere administrative console. An example of use of this case for this generic server is where, let's say for example, you have a JDE application, it requires a CORBA server be started. So defining this CORBA server as a generic server, you can use the WebSphere administrative client to start that CORBA server as well as your JDE enterprise application. So you can define your third party, any process or applications as a generic server, and also you can define the non-Java processes under this generic server section. Yeah, there are some limitations. WebSphere application server can only monitor generic servers that it has launched. If you have a shell script as your generic server, WebSphere has no way of knowing what the shell script launches. Therefore, you should not define generic servers that are launched using the scripts if you need the ability to monitor or terminate the process. Summary, so in this presentation, so far we have discussed the system management models, configuration repository, web server definition, configuration archives, and also the file synchronization process, the discovery process, fine-grained application update operation. I hope this information will help you when working with these options in your WebSphere product. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers an in-depth technical information. This event link on support page points you to a webcast and a conference information, so you'll find a lot of useful information. The ESR tool is for password advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. All right, that concludes my presentation.
We'll take our first question from Neeraj Kotiyal.
This is Neeraj. Thanks for the presentation. It was really helpful. We are just basically migrating from 5.1 to 6.1, and we have already installed the product. This is an i5 OS, and quick question was, when we installed, we use the default port while installing. So can we just change it within the configuration? We saw a place where it says that we can change that. So
Right. Yeah, it's possible to change that port information into
okay.
the configuration, but we may have to edit a couple of configuration XML files. Depends on the port location. So what is that specific port that you have the conflict?
Basically, we use the default 9060 port.
Oh, okay. That is the admin console port, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can update that information in the server index.xml file. Like if you have let's say, for example, the DMZR profile installation path.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into the config folder,
mm-hmm.
under the config, there is a folder with the cells and then cell name.
Uh-huh.
And if you go further down into the nodes folder, you're going to see your manager node.
Okay.
So under this directory, there is a file name called serverindex.xml.
Okay.
So if you edit this file, so you will see all the ports that this WebSphere deployment manager is using.
Okay.
So one of them would be 9060.
Okay.
So you can update this port number value here. We normally not recommend, you know, updating any XML files manually, but at the moment, sometimes if you have any problems even bringing up admin console,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any way to update that port information from the administrative console. In that case, yeah, you can update XML file manually, but we always recommend before updating anything into the configuration files, take a backup.
Okay.
Is that helps?
Yeah, basically, and just one thing, like serverindex.xml, the file's location is the same as it in 5.1?
Right. Okay. Yeah, the file location is the same. Yeah, it's the same between 5.1 and the 6.0.6.1.
Okay.
Pretty much the repository structure is very similar in all the versions of WebSphere.
Okay. And one more question, if that's okay, but a couple more. But like, if anybody else has any question, then I can wait.
I think that should be okay.
Okay. Yeah, basically, had another question. I know that in one of the slides that you had shown, slide number 19, you had gave a managed node in a ND cell.
Uh-huh.
Environment wherein the applications were installed in different servers, basically.
Uh-huh.
And they were being managed from a remote location.
Right.
So in that case, like I had a specific question regarding dynamic caching. Basically, if we have an active and a passive scenario for the two servers, like can we configure it and where so that we can achieve dynamic caching?
That's something I need to defer offline, Madhu. Basically, I'm specialized in the system management component area, whereas when it comes to the dynamic cache, so we have other teams, separate team.
Okay.
We have specialization, but I definitely can get you the answer.
Okay, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.